As Prabhupada writes in the purport, this is just the Buddhist philosophy that the body is just a group of chemicals and it dissolves at some particular point, and that when the soul becomes liberated, then he simply disappears. Very exciting finish. You just wind up in the void somewhere. Prabhupada writes that even at the time when Lord Krishna was speaking the Bhagavad Gita, that these two different types of philosophies, the Buddhist philosophies that it mentions here, loka, yatikas, and vaibhashikas, they were existent then, what to speak of now. And text 20 says, so Krishna answers in two ways. In the next two verses, he gives two different alternatives. One is for the one who believes that he's not his body, and therefore there's no reason to lament over the destruction of the body. And for the other who believes that he is the body, that the body is made out of elements, different material elements, and that at the destruction of the body, everything disappears. So there's no reason to lament either. Text 27. Sutasihi dhruvam ritur dhruvam janmam ritasya tasmada parihariyate natvam sochiti marasi. For one who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. Text 28. Avyaktadini bhutani vyaktamadhyani bharata avyaktini dhananyeva tatraka paridevana. All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest again when annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? Text 29 is called the amazing verse. As those who have taken the Bhagavad Gita course before, they know that this is a very amazing verse, because it can be explained in 9 different ways. And following the commentaries of the Aracharyas, so if you listen to carefully, you'll be amazed at how wonderful this verse is. Text 29. Askaryavad pashuti kaschidenam askaryavad vadati tatayava chanya askaryavad chayanam anyak shrinoti shudvatnivam veda nachayava kaschit. Some look on the soul as amazing, some describe him as amazing, and some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. 3 different things are mentioned here. Pashyati, which means seeing, Vadati, which means hearing, and Shunoti, so that means hearing. Vadati means to describe, to speak of. So, Askaryavat, which means amazing, can either apply to the word, the seer, the person who's seeing, for instance, or the person who's hearing, or the person who's describing. Or it could mean the person who's being described about, namely the soul. Or it could mean the act of describing, or the act of seeing, or the act of hearing. So if it means the person who's describing about the soul, so that means some amazing people, they speak about the soul. Anyone who can speak about the soul, he must be amazing. And if it refers to the act of speaking, it means that it's amazing that some people can actually speak about the soul. And if it refers to the soul, what's being described, then it's amazing that it's some people can speak about the soul who's amazing. Similarly, some people, amazing people, they speak about the soul. And it's amazing that some people can actually speak about the soul. And some people can speak about the soul, again, who's amazing. And similarly, some people hear about the soul. Some amazing people hear about the soul, especially if they stay awake. Then they're amazing that they can hear, then it's amazing that they can actually hear about the soul. And that some people hear about the soul who's amazing. So in this way it can be described in 9 different ways, coming from the Acharyas. Then text 30 is a summary of the whole preceding verses. Dehi nityam avadyo yam dehe sarvasya bharata tasmat sarvani bhutani natvam shoshiti marasi. O descendant of Bharata, he who dwells in the body can never be slain. Therefore, you need not grieve for any living being. Krishna has now explained about his soul, and now he's going to explain about karmakanda. Karmakanda means that one follows the Vedas, but he does so in order to get some material reward back. If one doesn't follow the Vedas, and he acts independently, then he doesn't get anything auspicious. But by following the Vedas, one can get material wealth, material position, he may get material comfort, or he may go to the heavenly planets. The ultimate goal of the Karmakanda section is to go to the heavenly planets. So Krishna is saying that even if you don't believe in the soul, then you should still do your duty. Because that's the only way of getting anything auspicious, is to do your duty following the Vedas. So even if you can't understand what I've said before, still Krishna says you should follow the Vedic literature if you want something auspicious. So here, in text 31 to 38, Krishna will defeat so many different arguments that Arjuna has already brought up. Just like Arjuna has brought up the argument about incurring sin, he's about the argument whether he's going to be happy or not, whether he's going to, what his next destination would be. He said he was going to go to hell if he incurred the sin. So Krishna will defeat all the different arguments. More or less the second chapter, the third chapter, parts of the fourth chapter, especially the second and third chapter, they're all answering Arjuna's arguments so that he becomes enthused to do his duty. So text 31. So dharma mapi chavaksham navi kampitu marasi dharmyadi unyatre unyak kshatriyasya navidyate. Considering your specific duties of kshatriya, you should know that there is no better engagement for you than fighting on religious principles, and so there is no need for hesitation. In other words, as a kshatriya, or kshatriya, that you should fight because that's the best thing for you to do. That if you take up the role of a Brahmin, as Krishna will say, that's not as good for you as if you act as a kshatriya and fight. And now he'll say, text 32, Yadricha chopapanam swagam dwaram aparitam sukhina kshatriya partha lavate yudyam idrisham. O partha, happy are the kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. Arjuna, he's worried that if I fight in this battle, so many people will be killed. My grandfather, my teacher, my relatives. So he was worried, but everyone else was quite happy. Everyone had come there in very enthusiastic spirits to engage in the fight. Because the warriors, at least at that time, they were beyond the bodily concept of life. For them it was just like sporting. They didn't think that when they were going to die, that was the end. They knew that if they were killed on this battlefield, it would be the quickest way they could go to heaven. And if they won, they'd simply get the kingdom. In any case, they knew that it was auspicious, and they were not lamenting. Only Arjuna was lamenting. Therefore, Krishna says that generally the kshatriyas are quite happy to fight. Just like in the Daksha Jagga, Prabhupada describes that at that time when the demigods were fighting against the demons, that although there were some very horrible things that were happening, for instance, Pulastha, who had looked angrily at Lord Shiva, this Virabhadra, he poked out his eyes. And the other demigod, I forget his, Twak, who had smiled at Lord Shiva when he was being cursed, Virabhadra, who smashed all his teeth out. And similarly, he smashed the teeth of Daksha out. And then he cut off his head with the guillotine that was at the sacrifice to cut off the heads of the animals. But Prabhupada said actually they were all engaging in a very enthusiastic spirit, cursing and counter-cursing and displaying different mystic powers because they found it quite exciting. It's hard for us to imagine, especially if you, but in any case, the demigods and the demons and the ghosts were quite happy about the war. Similarly, these great warriors, they were quite enthusiastic. So here, Krishna will say, text 33, about if you don't fight, you're thinking that if you fight, you'll incur sin for killing all these people, but if you don't fight, if you don't do your duty, then you'll incur sin and neglecting your duty. Krishna is counteracting all of Arjuna's arguments. It's not that Arjuna spoke the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning of the second, and Krishna forgot about all the arguments and just went on and told him that you're not your body, forget about it. You know, you're in Maya, get out of Maya, you're a spiritual being, I'm God, follow me, and that's it. But Krishna very logically and systematically defeats each one of Arjuna's arguments one after another. Text 33. Ata chetvami mam dharmyam sangramam nakarishasi tataksu dharmam kirtim cha hetva papam avapsasi. If, however, you do not perform your religious duty of fighting, then you will certainly incur sins for neglecting your duties and thus lose your reputation as a fighter. If you don't fight, then you'll incur sins. So you have to know you're a kshatriya. Your duty is to fight. And if you don't fight, then you'll incur sins. But if you fight, then Krishna will say in the next verse, not quite yet. Text 34. Akiratim chapi bhutani kati shanti tadvai vayam sambhavitasi cha kirtir marna na churichate. People always speak of your infamy, and for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. It's very important for the kshatriyas to have a good reputation. If everyone thought, you know, that Arjuna, he's a has-been, he used to be a good kshatriya, but now they're going to put him out to pasture, that he's useless, he can't even defend himself or to speak of anyone else, then that's a great insult for a kshatriya. So Arjuna is thinking, I'm going to be a nice person, I'm not going to hurt anyone, I'm going to the forest, I'll take an early retirement, I'll see the war on television or whatever. Then I'm a nice person, I don't want to hurt anyone. So everyone will love me, they'll think, oh Arjuna, he's such a sweet kshatriya. He wouldn't even hurt a fly. That he retired because he's so soft-hearted and kind. So let's have a special Memorial Day during the war for Arjuna. So what will they say? So in the next verse, Bayad Renadu Paritam Mamsite Twa Maharata Yesham Cha Twa Mahumatvo Bhutva Yasasi Lagavam. The great generals who have highly esteemed your name and fame will think that you have left the battlefield out of fear only, and thus they will consider you insignificant. It's not that the generals will think, oh Arjuna, who's a nice person, they'll think, what a fool. He had this opportunity, he could have died and went to heaven or gained the kingdom, but instead, he's such a coward that he just fled the battlefield. Therefore, they'll spend simply their time criticizing that Arjuna, he's a low class, you know, nothing, rascal, etc., etc. Text 36. Avacha varamscha bahun varishanti devahita indantas tamasamartam tuto dukaturam nukim. Your enemies will describe you in many unkind words and scorn your ability. What could be more painful for you? So sticks and stones may break my bones, but names, they gradually get to me after a while. I don't know if they have the expression like that. In English they say, sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never harm me. But actually, for a kshatriya, if they keep on criticizing the kshatriya, then he gets a little disturbed. Text 37. Hatova prapsise swargam jitva va bokshase mahim tasmadi tis to konteya yudaya krita nischaya. O son of Kunti, either you'll be killed on the battlefield and attain the heavenly planets, or you will conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. Therefore, get up and fight with determination and fight. Previously, Arjuna was saying that if I fight in this battlefield and I'm killed, then I lost everything. I was killed. And if I win and I kill all my relatives, then I kill all my relatives, so I lost. So if I win, I lose. And if I lose, I lose. But here Krishna says that if you're killed on the battlefield, then you'll go to the heavenly planets. So you'll win. And if you win and you get the earthly kingdom, then you won. So if you lose, you win. And if you win, you win. Krishna has just reversed what Arjuna had said. Now, after defeating Arjuna's arguments, now he begins in text 38. This is just the very beginning of Buddhi Yoga, which is what Krishna wants Arjuna to do, to work, but to work with knowledge. Sometimes, this is also the definition of Rupa Goswami, anyabhilasita shunyam jnana karma diravritam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama, that one's devotional service should be favorable, should not be covered by fruit of intentions or desires or any kind of mental speculation. At the same time, we should do something that's favorable to Krishna and which is pleasing to Krishna. Our attitude should be favorable, and what we do should also be pleasing to Krishna. So this is also Buddha Yoga. We should work knowing what Krishna wants us to do, and we should do that to please Krishna. Do the right thing with the right consciousness. Text 38, and not to be attached. Text 38. Sukadu kesame kritva lavala bojayadiyo tito yudai jasva naivam papam avapsisi. Do thou fight for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so doing you shall never incur sin. This detachment, by hearing we become detached, and by detachment, or by hearing we gain knowledge, and with knowledge we gain detachment. And by working without attachment, that's called karma yoga. That's the difference between karma or karmakanda. One works, follows the instructions of the Vedas, but his idea is that in the future I'll get some material benefit. But when one works without attachment to the future result, that's called karma yoga. He works with knowledge that I'm not my body, I'm a spiritual being. I'm doing this activity, for instance, just to please Krishna, because Krishna wants me to do it, so that's called karma yoga. And this is what Krishna will explain in 39. Eshvete bhita sankhye buddhi yogi tvanam chinu buddhya yukta ya partha karma bandhan prahasyasi. That's why I've described this knowledge to you through analytical study. So that's the verses 11 to 30, that we're not the body. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruit of results. Asana pritha. When you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. This is what Krishna especially recommends. One works, but he works in knowledge. One time the devotees asked Prabhupada what honesty meant on Sankirtan, how to be honest. And Prabhupada said that if you perform book distribution with the knowledge that everything here belongs to Krishna, and everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure, and that Krishna is the friend of everyone, if you perform your service in that consciousness, that's complete honesty. And if you perform your activities without that consciousness, then there's no possibility of actually being honest. Text 40, Krishna is glorifying here about if you work in this consciousness, what the results are. So it's not a question of exactly what we're doing, it's also a question of the consciousness. Buddha yoga means to work, but to work in knowledge. So text 40. Neha vikramana shasti prayavayo navidyate swapamapyasya dharmasya chayate mahato bayat. In this endeavor, there's no loss of diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. And of course, we all know what the most dangerous type of fear is. What is it? Yeah, that's true. As I once mentioned in a class, Prabhupada was giving a class at the university and describing about that if you perform sinful activities, then you might have to come back as a dog or a cat in your next lifetime. So one student raised their hands at the end and said, Swamiji, I'd like you to know that you've described that if one performs sinful activities, then he might have to come back as a cat or a dog. But I'd like you to know that I wouldn't mind coming back as a dog. So Prabhupada smiled and said, yes, you have my blessings. I'm sure he's practically already a dog. Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is very kind. If one sincerely wants to become a dog, he gives them all facility. It's not that Krishna puts all... Of course, he doesn't recommend to become a dog. He himself, when he speaks, he never speaks like that. That comes from Maya's disciple succession. But Krishna said, but if one sincerely endeavors, and it takes a lot of endeavor to become a dog in your next lifetime, the whole society has to be arranged to help you do it. They have to work hard. We can see in most societies people work hard to perform sinful activities. Building, to have a slaughterhouse, you have to construct the building, you have to raise the animals just like here, and then you have to transport them, you have to slaughter them, you have to do so many horrible things, all to so that you can eat and process a little piece of meat that big. You have to go through in great endeavor, and then after you become qualified, after you get trained up, then you can become a tiger in your next lifetime. And that way, you don't have to go through all the whole endeavor of manufacturing a slaughterhouse. Krishna says, why bother? If you want to eat meat, and you like your food rare, then I'll give you a body. And you can, at least once a month, you can have a big feast. Prabhupada said the tiger, he doesn't have it so easy. Because everywhere he goes, there's a little bird and goes, beep, beep, here comes the tiger, here comes the tiger. So as soon as the animals hear this little bird going, beep, beep, here comes the tiger, they all run away. So the tiger, he has to chase after the animals for a month, and then finally he can catch something. You know, some little rabbit that's sleeping or something. And then he gets a chance to eat. So although these big meat eaters, they get the opportunity to become a tiger, but still they have some problems. Text 41. So now Krishna, well, this is also Buddha Yoga, but this next verse, this is a verse where when Prabhupada heard it, he became struck with wonder. That he was a householder at that time. He was preaching Krishna consciousness. His wife was not very encouraging in his endeavor. But still he tried the best he can. But then he was reading this verse, this commentary, by Śrīla Viṣvanātha Chakravarti Thakura, and he became struck with wonder, and he remembered the orders of his spiritual master. And then he decided to take up the mission of Krishna consciousness. He remembered that his spiritual master had asked him to preach in the Western world. So we owe a lot to the commentary of Śrīla Viśvanātha Śakyamuni Thakura, because it inspired the founder Acharya of Hare Krishna movement to create the Hare Krishna movement. So it must be quite a potent verse. So we can read this verse in a little bit of Prabhupada's purport. Text 41. Vyavasayatmika buddhi eka gurunandana bahushakayanantascha buddhiya vyavasayinam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. In the 15th chapter, Krishna will also point out that this material world is just like a banyan tree, which has its roots upward and its branches down, and the hymns of the Vedas are its leaves. That one who knows this tree, he's said to be the knower of the Vedas. It's also interesting to point out that when Prabhupada was trying to describe, figure out what the universe looked like, he finally concluded that it looked like a banyan tree. And that the upper planetary systems are, like he described the whole thing as just like a banyan tree. So you can, if you want to imagine what the universe looks like, just think of a banyan tree with its roots upward. You know how the roots in the banyan tree, sometimes they come up. Because the tree grows, some of the roots go down, but then the tree grows its roots upward, and the roots go up, and then they come back down into the ground, and then they start again, and they form another banyan tree coming up again. So the universe, it has all the planet, all the systems are up and down like that. So adas churvam pravritas tasya sakya guna pravrita vishaya pravala adas chagmulan anashantitani karmanu bandini manusha loke. Krishna says the adas churvam pravritas tasya sakya. So its roots are spread everywhere. Krishna is describing this material world and the three modes. He says they were spread everywhere, the roots. Adas churvam pravritas tasya sakya. And the branches and everything is just spread all over, up and down, everywhere. And its roots are the three modes of material nature. And its and the different branches of the vishaya, pravala, are the objects of the senses. And this tree has roots going downward, which are bound to the fruit of activities of human society. And here again, Krishna is saying that if you get off the transcendental platform, then you wind up in this, somewhere on these roots of the branches of this banyan tree. But you can never, a banyan tree, they say in parts of India, like in Calcutta, there's banyan trees which, one banyan tree is 100 hectares. So there's no way you can figure out where is the first tree. They all look like brothers and sisters. Similarly, if one gets entangled in the tree of material existence, then the result is that one can never figure out where it began and where it's going to end. Similarly, if one wants to analyze his psychophysical nature, how it all began, you know, and then regress back to another lifetime to find out why, you know, you hate it, why you hate everyone who looks like your little sister. So you have to, you know, regress back, you know, 100 lifetimes, and you still can't get it, and 1,000 lifetimes, you know, then you find out that there was someone who looked like your little sister who stole your pocketbook when 1,000 lifetimes ago. You just can't forget. So in this way, if one gets entangled in the material existence trying to figure out psychologically where it all began and where it's going to end, there's no end to it. It's just like a banyan tree. You just get lost in all the different ideas and feelings and emotions. So therefore, Krishna doesn't recommend that. He recommends ekeha kuru nandana. Become fixed in the orders of the spiritual master. But as long as one is fixed in the orders of the spiritual master, then he's safe and that maya can't touch him. And as soon as he starts getting off that platform into his psychophysical nature, then immediately he gets lost in the endless banyan tree and then his hero becomes, you know, he starts reading books on Freud, and he thinks, well, he's not nice, maybe Eric Fromm, or maybe Jung or someone, and then the New Age philosopher, and then he keeps on looking and looking. I'm getting a little closer. Actually, my psychiatrist said I was a nice person. There's something deep inside me that's real nice. I always thought like that. Someone keeps on going on and on and on, goes to the astrologer and says, yes, you have one planet in your chart that's, you know, it's not completely afflicted. You should work on that half good quality you have, make it into a, you know, three quarters. This way he becomes a little encouraged. So one can go on and on like that and simply get lost in the banyan tree, but Krishna doesn't recommend that. So here he recommends, become fixed in intelligence. And this is what Prabhupada says in the purport. Service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student, and can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. So this knowing the nature of the student doesn't mean that the spiritual master, he knows exactly what the psychology of the student is. He knows, you know, he's some kind of mystic, he can enter into the heart of the student and know exactly what he's feeling, and no, not like that. He knows more or less what kind of engagement is suitable for the devotee. That much he should know. If he knows what the devotee can do and engages him like that, that's perfect. What more does he have to know? As such, be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna. And one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers to the spiritual master as follows. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati kutopi dayam stuvam tasya yasaspi sanjam bande guroshi charanaravindam. By the satisfaction of the spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes satisfied. And by not satisfying the spiritual master, there's no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should therefore meditate and pray for his mercy three times a day and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. So this is the secret of success in spiritual life. This is what Prabhupada emphasized, is faith in the spiritual master. Because that's a whole topic in itself. Sometimes we know in ISKCON nowadays, because of some unfortunate occurrences in the past, of some of the devotees who are taking the role of the spiritual master leaving, now so many bogus philosophies have appeared, have manifested themselves. More or less. And therefore, people are doubting, you know, what is a bona fide spiritual master? You know, you have to, now they say you have to be able to see, you have to be able to see Krishna face to face. You have to be able to open your heart, and there, people should be able to see a form of Krishna in your heart. You're actually seeing him face to face. Or that you have to be an Uttama Adhikari. Because even if someone was an Uttama Adhikari, who would be able to recognize him? Unless the person was also an Uttama Adhikari. For instance, Srila Prabhupada, his godbrothers, never thought he was an Uttama Adhikari. Even after he spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world, they still didn't recognize him as doing anything very significant. They said, yes, he created some thousands of disciples, but they're all a bunch of malechas. That much credit you get. You're able to make malechas and yavanas, get them to chant a few rounds. So Prabhupada, we accept him, for instance, as the Mahabhagavata. Of course, the symptoms are there, just the fact that he spread Krishna consciousness all around the world, but Krishna consciousness has already been spread around the world. So what are you supposed to do to be a Mahabhagavata now? You're supposed to go to another planet and spread it there. Come back, you know. I went to Mars, now they're all chanting Hare Krishna. Accept me as an Uttama Adhikari. No, in other words, one has to understand what are the symptoms of a Mahabhagavata that we can perceive as conditioned souls. Then, if someone displays those qualities, if we still say that, all right, he's displaying those qualities, but I remember when he was just an ordinary devotee, he committed so many mistakes. He wasn't very serious. Prabhupada gives the example that in India, some people were living in one village, and one of their friends became very prominent. And eventually, he became a high court judge. So one of his friends told another one of the friends, I've seen Mr. Patel, he was sitting on the high court. He's become a high court judge. So his friend said, who was a little envious, he said, I don't believe it. It's not possible. He said, no, I saw it myself. I went there, and I saw he was actually sitting on the high court. He said, how is that possible? He was a fool when I used to know. He said, no, he was sitting there. So his friend and I said, all right, maybe they made him a high court judge, but I'm sure they're not giving him any salary. So similarly, even if someone displays all the qualities that are listed, if someone says, well, that may be all right, but we know he's not really a real devotee. It's just he's acting like that. He's pretending. Let me read from Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura, his commentary, at least part of the commentary on this particular verse that inspired Srila Prabhupada. He says that the best kind of intelligence is Satchinanda Maharaj read this in his class, but I'll repeat it again. The best kind of intelligence I can have is intelligence used in the service of Krishna. Intelligence is defined as fixed when it is intent upon my spiritual master's instructions, such as chanting the name of Krishna, remembering his activities, and performing service to his lotus feet. My spiritual master's instructions are my sadhana and my life, both in the beginning stages of bhakti as in the bhakti's perfectional stage. I desire only to follow his instructions. I accept nothing else as my life's work, even in dreams. Whether I am happy or distressed, whether the material world remains or is destroyed, I don't care. There is no loss for me. I simply carry the orders of my spiritual master. Fixedness upon his orders determines intelligence and devotional service, and only by being fixed on his orders can such determined intelligence prosper. So this is our main emphasis, is to find a representative of Krishna and to follow his instructions. Otherwise, how is it possible we'll know what Krishna wants us to do? Yes. What qualities are you referring to?
For instance,
I guess everyone has, you can understand how to understand these things, but generally the qualities that are mentioned are observable qualities. At least we should start with that. For instance, Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Instruction that the spiritual master should complete every day at least 16 rounds. So, you see him chanting all day long, you figure probably made 16 rounds at least. And he should follow all the rules and regulations. So if he's attending the program and he's acting according to the rules and regulations of Vaishnava, that's also good. And he should spend his time planning how to spread Krishna consciousness around the world. So these are observable symptoms, especially how he's preaching Krishna consciousness. If someone's preaching with realization, then he must have some realization. Otherwise, where did it come from?
It's not that I cannot see those qualities, but it's just, I don't know why they always identify themselves like
Well, because there's an injunction that if you identify yourself as a pure devotee, that means you're not a pure devotee. But objectively, I mean, we have to, just like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he's saying in his book that I'm lower than the worm in the stool. That anyone who chants my name, he immediately loses all his pious activities. So we know anyone who can write a book such as Chaitanya Charitamrita, then he must be an exalted Bhagavat. But he's claiming that he's lower than the worm in the stool. That even Jagai and Madhai, they're more pious than he was. Because at least they had the good quality of being born as Brahmins, etc., etc. So how do we understand it? Because there's different ways. One is that we ourselves are not this body. We're a spiritual being. So if there's any good quality that we have, it all comes through the mercy of our spiritual master. That's the fact that somehow or another we have the good fortune of coming into his association, and therefore by his mercy we're able to follow his instructions. Therefore one has no good quality except for the fact that he's being used as an instrument for his spiritual master. And without being used as an instrument for his spiritual master, that he would be very enthusiastic about committing all kinds of sinful activities. Therefore he sees himself being protected by Krishna and the disciple succession, and by himself thinking, understanding that without their mercy he would be engaged in all kinds of sinful activities. So in that way he may see that he's being used as an instrument by their kindness and mercy, but he himself, he knows that he's not actually so kind or merciful. Is that clear? Depend on the circumstances. I remember one time Prabhupada said that I'm your spiritual master, you have to follow me. The other times he would say that, you know, do yatechasi tata karu, I've told you, now do as you wish. And Prabhupada would say different things which were appropriate for the circumstances. If he was, sometimes they were challenged. One time in Sweden, Prabhupada was giving a lecture and he was saying what a first class man should do. And then one person questioned him and said, well, what class are you? You must be a first class man. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm a fifth class man. He said, no, you're first. He said, what class do you think I am? So he said, I think you're first class. Prabhupada said, no, I'm fifth class because I'm a servant of the fourth class man. So Prabhupada didn't say it simply to be arrogant or to say something cunning. He said it because of genuine humility. But at other times, if he was challenged, you know, what is your qualification? Then Prabhupada said, well, I'm following the orders of my spiritual master, and therefore I can call people fools and rascals. It's not that I'm calling them fools and rascals, but I'm simply repeating Krishna's words. So Prabhupada could preach very strongly, but he had knowledge of what he was doing. He didn't lose his humility by calling people fools and rascals. Now, if we go out in the street, we meet someone, and they say, well, I'm not interested in Krishna consciousness. And we go, you're a fool, you're a rascal. You'll be born as a dog if you're lucky. Then, obviously, the people, you know, we may not be saying that with full understanding of what our position is. Yes. Does that answer your question? Good luck. Nice faith. But then we should, what is the, in other words, if we're really convinced like that, that the system is so nice that they set up, that anyone who's gone through the system must be a pure devotee, that's nice. But that's not why Prabhupada wrote the books. I mean, it's not that we should understand. I think if you look at the system, you'll find out that some thought was put into it in order to assure that there would be the persons who take the role of a spiritual master have some qualities, have some qualifications. But on the other hand, Prabhupada wrote the books so that we should study the books and assimilate the knowledge so that we ourselves can understand who's on what level. You can't. And if you take the letter, then you can understand that the postman has done his duty. So the duty of the spiritual master principally is to deliver the message as it is coming down through disciplic succession. Of course, if he follows that message, then we can understand, it's easier to understand it. On the other hand, we do have to study the books. One time Prabhupada, when there was one devotee, he was the head of the New York temple in the 1970s. But suddenly one day, he met one lady on the street, one Chinese lady, and he became attracted to her. She started to come to the temple, and she was saying that she was a heiress to the Toyota company, that her father had millions and millions of, or billions of dollars, etc. She was going to be the heiress. It just so happened he met her walking in New York street. Anyhow, if you want to be cheated, Krishna send someone to cheat you. So then he became attracted to her, cultivated her. Somehow or another, she became a devotee. Then, although he was a sannyasi, he convinced Prabhupada that they should get married because she was a big heiress. And so Prabhupada even performed the ceremony, and they were married. And then he went back in his position as the temple president of the GVC of New York and that area. Names are left out to protect. So he went back, and after some time, some strange things were going on. Like, for instance, the devotees found out that in the refrigerator of this lady, there was chicken and other kinds of things. And that, although he was married, they still demanded that he be called Goswami. And that she was more or less, she installed herself as the deity of the temple, one of the deities. So this went on for some time. I remember their Sankirtan party came to our, and they had gone to Florida. I was at that time, I was the temple president of Austin, and I had heard that their new Sankirtan was to break into stores. So some really strange things were going on. So the whole movement knew that this particular temple was in Maya, especially the leadership there. But everyone in the temple, they were being preached to that the whole rest of the movement was in Maya. Finally, there was some investigation, and this lady was exposed. So was her chicken in the refrigerator. And Prabhupada came to New York eventually, and he praised the devotees for following the instructions of this authority. But then when he met one of the senior devotees, he criticized one of the senior devotees in the temple. He said, "Why did you follow him?" So the senior devotee said, "But Prabhupada, you were praising the other devotees for following. So why are you criticizing me for following?" So Prabhupada said, "I was praising them for following, but I never told forgiving for surrendering, but I never told you to surrender your intelligence." So that may seem contradictory, but actually our whole faith in anything is based on our intelligence, a real faith. So we should develop our transcendental intelligence. Not that I become so intelligent now I can find all the faults in everyone. But that's not spiritual intelligence. Spiritual intelligence means anyone who's executing devotional service, he must be a devotee of Krishna, and therefore he's worthy of my respect. Now the only question is, who is worthy either to respect within my mind or to assist or to follow their instructions. So that type of intelligence has to develop how to discriminate between different devotees on different levels of devotional service, so I know how to properly serve them and reciprocate with them. Therefore, we have to develop that knowledge. And that comes through hearing and trying to apply. So if anyone who tells us to perform, any authority who tells us to perform some Krishna conscious activity, we should respect them. But as far as choosing who's going to be my spiritual master, then I have a responsibility to try to find out who is the most, as Prabhupada said, who's the most addicted to Krishna. Who has the clearest understanding, for instance, of how to engage me in Krishna service. Because someone may be very much attached to Krishna consciousness, but he may not be able to communicate it properly to me. So I may not benefit so much from taking shelter of him as I would from taking shelter of someone else who may be able to understand how to engage me or communicate with me in such a way as to inspire me to engage in Krishna service. Or how to someone who can explain to me how to perceive others in a devotional light so that I remain fixed in Krishna consciousness. Because as soon as we think that one who's a devotee is actually not a devotee, then immediately we fall into Maya. And as soon as we think that someone who's not a devotee, when we start thinking that they're actually devotees, then we also fall into Maya. So someone who can actually explain to me how to see things properly so that I not only don't fall into Maya, but I become liberated from Maya and I become enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. But I'm not, as far as, if you want to find out a good hint to look, then I think that the devotees who are taking up the role of spiritual masters within our society, it's a good start. If you want to find devotees who are, because after all, there's certain qualifications they have to meet. It's not that anyone, you know, puts their name into a hat and the GDC just pulls it out of the hat. It's not quite like that. Although some people may tend to try to make us believe like that. Since we only have 5 minutes left, is there any other questions? Yes.
Yeah. Also, at the time of Prabhupada, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would give instructions, especially to his GDC members, that they couldn't understand why he gave this instruction, and then they said, well, I'm so dull-headed, so I don't understand, but still I will follow it. So, how can you...
Well, that much, if that's the level that your intelligence is working on, that's all right. But after all, it's not that you've completely surrendered your intelligence. Surrendering your intelligence means that you stop seeing things through the eyes of Scripture. But if there's a person who's bona fide and he's giving you a bona fide instruction, that as far as you know, it may be bona fide, it may not be bona fide, but it's within reason. Now, if he told you that, you know, my instruction, you may not be able to understand this, but I want you to take a machine gun and get rid of a few leading politicians. So you think, well, I don't really, Gurudev is really profound. He has some mysterious, you know, motivation behind this. I can't quite find it in the Shastra, but, you know, after all, he's supposed to surrender. Now, most of us, we probably start questioning. You know, why did he choose me? Maybe there's some other disciple who might be more enthusiastic. So we might start questioning. And then we have to, you know, get some philosophical basis for what we're doing. And we might find it difficult. We don't expect, I don't think that so far hasn't happened with it, so much within our society. In any case, there has to be some, generally what Prabhupada told his disciples to do were completely within reason. You know, for instance, the example is used, he told one devotee to start a printing press. So he didn't quite understand. He had no experience, but he did it anyhow with faith. He said, Krishna will help you. He'll give you the intelligence. And he did it, and he became fairly successful at doing it because he followed the instructions. And Krishna did help him. So it has to be within reason. But surrendering intelligence in the sense that it doesn't say that, you know, someone gives me an instruction, it's not in Shastra. There's no tradition of a precedent. Like to call a Grihastha Goswami or to have chicken in the refrigerator. It's just not within the tradition. There's no Shastra. And not to question that means that I have to be rather foolish. Yeah, or that, you know, I touch you and you get an electric current that goes through you and suddenly, you know, within yourself you see that actually you're a Manjari somewhere or a peacock in Vrindavan. You know, for most of us, we've been trained up a little bit. It sounds a little strange. But it can become subtle. Therefore, you have to study the books. And that's especially if you're going to... Generally, most of us are not engaged in services that require so much subtle understanding. You know, most of us are not, for instance, if you go to Vrindavan, where you're surrounded by, you know, 150 temples with 150 different varieties of sahajiyas. And they're all enthusiastic, you know. And they're constantly associating with them. Then you have to have more profound knowledge than if you're, you know, living in the midst of Germany, where it's a little bit more obvious, you know, whether this person is drinking beer and going to the butcher shop, whether, you know, where he's at. So for most of us, it's not this, but still the idea is we have to study the scriptures. We have to study, we have to try and understand, we have to ask questions. But thankfully, we don't have to, every time, you know, our spiritual master or the temple president asks us to do something, we don't have to spend 3 hours looking through the books. If he says, can you please go and, you know, buy a loaf, get some cauliflower at the store, we don't have to look through the books for 2 hours trying to figure out whether or not it was a bona fide instruction. So probably most of our services are like that. You know, can you go out and distribute books? And we think, you know, what did he mean by that? Yes.
When you think those things are difficult, people also have it with Omanya. Do you think Omanya?
Negotiating?
Yeah,
we should communicate. Communication is allowed. It's not that, you know, the spiritual master says something and we just think, well, I don't really want to do it within my mind. It's, you know, he said, can you go, you know, go and tell so-and-so, you know, about that he should come here. But then you already know that so-and-so had died, you know, 2 days ago. So you think, well, I can't disobey the orders of my spiritual master. So I'm going to bring him here anyhow. It may not be so obvious as that, but sometimes the spiritual master may ask us to do something, but we may have some additional information that may clarify whether or not it's appropriate to do it or not, or how I should do it. It's not that we should blindly follow. So blind following, and Prabhupada says, and absurd inquiries are condemned. One should get a clear understanding through service, submission, and inquiries. Yes.
You were mentioning about this lady who desired to become a cat or a dog. Now probably at that same program she would also have to take a prasadam or maybe have chanted. Can we say that if you take one prasadam you don't have to come back as a lower life form, you get a human body. But what if the desire is otherwise?
Well, technically that's not true. Technically, Prabhupada said in one lecture, Montreal, in 1974, someone asked him that question. He said, Srila Prabhupada, if someone takes prasadam, does that guarantee that he won't come back as an animal? And Prabhupada said, no. He said, if one takes prasadam, then he's guaranteed in his next lifetime he'll get another opportunity to take prasadam, even if it's not in the human form of life. But if he takes prasadam knowing that it's offered to Krishna, what it is, then he'll be able to come back. He'll get the human form of life. In other words, just to eat prasadam doesn't guarantee, but one has to know that it's prasadam and eat it in Krishna consciousness. Is that clear? Therefore, we're not only distributing prasadam, we're also trying to distribute knowledge about Krishna. That's our principal thing. But we know that people in general, they're so dull that if you don't distribute prasadam, no one's going to come to hear about Krishna. Otherwise, if all you had to do is distribute prasadam, why would we waste time distributing books? Just go out with the halava and just go door to door. A lot easier. Give it out. You don't have to convince them about anything. And one day, you know, the halava will turn into a deity and they'll begin to worship Krishna. But we know that people, in order to actually benefit even from eating prasadam, even for ourselves, Satsarupa Maharaj, who was writing an article for a health and welfare magazine about his experience, he was asking me for some suggestions. So the suggestion I made was that we have to understand that our perfection of eating prasadam will be that at every bite, when we take every bite, we remember Krishna. One time Srila Prabhupada wrote to Vishnu Jan Maharaj, wrote to Srila Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, in my temple, this was in San Antonio, 1973, he said, all the devotees there, all they want to do all day long is eat prasadam. What should I do? Is that all right? So Prabhupada wrote back and said, that's all right. They can eat prasadam all day long, but between every bite they should chant Hare Krishna. So with that conclusion... So thank you very much. Of course, we didn't have time to complete the whole 18 chapters. We almost completed half of chapter 2. But we hope that somehow or another, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, the Super Soul, that I was able to convey something of what Krishna was speaking in the Bhagavad Gita, and that somehow or another you understood it. The Bhagavad Gita is an amazing book. This is that verse is amazing. It can be understood in so many different ways. And the more we study it, the more amazing it becomes. Even Sanjaya, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he was completely in ecstasy. He didn't think, now I've understood the Bhagavad Gita, the ABCs, I'm a little bored. You know, what's next? Now, he was simply amazed how wonderful it was. And he was in ecstasy. And by reading the Bhagavad Gita, he wound up constantly meditating upon Krishna and was struck with wonder. So the Bhagavad Gita will eventually, by reading it and studying it, will be able to very easily understand Krishna and will be able to absorb our minds in meditating upon him 24 hours a day. And that will be the perfection of our lives. And then even if we go on to other books, then the other books will be able to really fashionably understand what they're talking about. And immediately we'll be able to see Krishna in everything. So thank you very much for your patience and listening to the Bhagavad Gita. And we hope that all of us become, by the Bhagavad Gita's mercy, very shortly enter into the spiritual world and continue preaching Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Grantarai Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaura Premanande Hari Bol.
Gaurani Kaya Kiri. that a simple karma activity as karma yoga, or is devotional service?
Well, it depends on their consciousness. If they're seeing their family in relation to Krishna, then they may be doing everything for Krishna. Although it appears that they're not, it's not that only one can perform service in the temple. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that by chanting Hare Krishna, my whole house became, you know, the, just like Vaikuntha. When I was chanting Hare Krishna, then the Charanamrita became just like the Ganges. So it depends on one's consciousness. Well, it's certainly easier to give everything to the temple. You have nothing to worry about. You know, all you do is think of the temple. But of course, if you give everything to the temple, and your wife doesn't have any clothes, you probably have more to worry about. You know, if you make some adjustments.
Well, I suppose that because I like to carry on with it, sitting in my life. Is there a whole picture of the whole 18
chapters
that
you can recommend? Yeah. Bridget. Yeah.
You know what? I get that.
I'll get that.
Does the other person do it?
You might ask here. Do they have it here?
Yeah.
You can get it here.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark.